Hello and welcome to the latest episode of Linux Lads. As you can tell, I'm not Shane. Shane has said he's been super tired. He's been working his ass off despite the COVID-19 madness. So I'll be your host for this evening. And joining me today, as always, is Mike.
Hiya.
And we're also joined by a very special guest, Rocco. Say hello to everyone.
Hello, I am not Shane.
Who could tell, hey?
Right.
Hi, Rocco. And thanks for coming on the show.
It is my pleasure. I love listening to you guys. You guys have such a great chemistry together. It's awesome.
No problem at all. One thing off the bat I'll ask you, Rocco, is have you ever played the game Metal Gear Solid?
Metal Gear Solid? No, I have not played the game Metal Gear Solid.
Okay, I was going to make a reference, but that's kind of died on its ass at the moment. But that's okay. I would highly recommend that people go out and play the game Metal Gear Solid. It's a very good game.
I remember playing it when it was already old, and it was about 2008. So is that the thing you're referring to?
It's the original Metal Gear Solid is a PlayStation 1 game.
Okay.
And then there was a second one and a third one on the PlayStation 2, and then the PlayStation 3 had the fourth one. Not sure about the fifth. I think the fifth might have been the PlayStation 4. So there
I've played. I must have played it on the original Xbox, I think.
There were other ports. Yeah, I think there was PC ports of it as well. But the very original was PlayStation 1 exclusive, I think.
But there might have been.
Ports after the fact, but at the time it was PlayStation exclusive.
Are you a PlayStation elitist?
No. people can play whatever platform they want.
Well, I know it's really popular, but I've never played it.
So, Rocco, why don't you tell us a bit about yourself? So, what do you do for a living, and how would people know you from the interwebs?
Well, people would not know me for what I do for a living because I am a plumber. So,
oh, I did not know that.
Yeah, that is something that people wouldn't know me for. But I do have a YouTube channel, a podcast, however you want to call it. We do a live stream on Saturday nights called Big Daddy Linux Live, where we get a bunch of the community members together in one room. I think this past week we had 32 people on a Zoom chat. And it's pure craziness at times because, you know, trying to moderate something like that when everybody's talking. But it is so much fun. And we do that every week. We do a distro challenge for 2 weeks. And then I do a show called Linux Spotlight. So that is a collection of everybody's journey into Linux. And Connor, you were on there.
I was indeed, and I believed you talked to me for a whole 2 hours, and I'm surprised you did not cut 50% out of it.
I usually leave most of everything in there. I mean, unless it's something like, something major, I usually leave it in there.
So is it fair to say that Linux is one of your biggest, if not the biggest, hobby for you?
It is the biggest hobby for me. I have been using Linux probably since 2003, 2004, 2005, somewhere in that area. You know, as you go along, the details kind of get fuzzy on, you know, years and specific dates and stuff. But yeah, somewhere in that time frame. And I didn't start a YouTube channel or a podcast until I think it was late 2016, where I ended up starting Destination Linux with Rob Collins. And actually, it was 2016 when I started the YouTube channel. It was 2017, I think, was our first episode, the beginning of it.
Wow. So, it's been feeling like you've been, and that is one of the very early shows that I remember just being there and being like solid quality, like knocking it out of the park. And so it's in my mind, it feels like it was earlier, but when you say it was only 2017, I'm thinking, wow, that was only, what, 3 years ago, three, 4 years ago.
Well, I have went back and listened to some of those episodes, and man, they are not quality. But well,
to be honest, I remember listening to them when I used to cycle across half of Dublin to my previous job, and you know, you were one of those podcasts that I would stick on through that miserable journey through rain, sleet, cold temperature, and mad drivers. And it's always been with any podcast that I did, like Linux podcast, really good to listen to people who share this hobby and who are willing to talk about that. So yeah, it is definitely been really good, really good. Going back to 2000 and something, how did you first hear about Linux? How did you get to it?
Well, it's funny you mention that, because doing these Linux Spotlight episodes, and I hear all of these different people talk about how they started in Linux, I kind of, you know, you kind of fill in the blanks on your own story of, oh yeah, that happened. And Dave Dreaming Wolf was one of the Linux Spotlight episodes, and he had mentioned that he had heard about, you know, Linux and Ubuntu in the Overclocker forums. And I'm thinking to myself, that's exactly where I heard about this new Linux thing. And I used the Wilby installer to install it. And
that brings me back. Oh, God, that
right?
Brings me back. Oh, God, yeah.
And the first time it didn't go too well. Second time I tried it, it was a good experience as far as installing it. It went well, but at the time I didn't know how to use it. Basically, that's what it came down to. I couldn't see my files on my other drive. I didn't know how to get to them. So it was like I had this great operating system that I could use, but I was handcuffed basically by my lack of knowledge. So I, you know, went back to Windows, and then later ended up installing it again, and just fell in love with the fact that I could start changing stuff. And this is back in KDE 3.5 days, and you could just change everything, and it was awesome.
Yeah, that was customizable to everybody. Yeah, it was, if you wanted to bork your computer as well, KDE 3.5 was absolutely the right tool for that too.
And I think it's the Trinity desktop?
Yeah, it is the Trinity desktop.
Yeah, it's the continuation of KDE3.
Well, you know, some people still use XP, so I assume there are people who really like the 3.5 version of KDE. It used to be the default on Slackware, I think, for the longest time. And so, yeah, you know, people like what they like.
Yep.
And that brings us smoothly into what is the distribution you're running at the moment. I can already spot that there's some Pop OS backgrounds in your background there, but I don't know if you just liked the background and decided to put it on a different distro, or is that running Pop OS in the background?
No, that is definitely running Pop OS. I have one computer back there running Peppermint, one running Pop OS, but the main machine, and as much as I love distro hopping, I've got to the point where in the last year or two that I just want a stable system to be there when I go to it. So I love customizing, but I don't like fixing it when I break it. Yeah. So I have a test machine for that kind of stuff, and the main system runs Pop OS.
Okay, so your machine that you're recording on at the moment, that's running Pop OS as well, is it?
That is correct. And it's been my longest running distro because I'm a reformed distro hopper, and I've been running Pop OS since April of last year. So it's coming up on a year.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
I don't
think I've ever spent a year on a,
yeah,
on a
exactly.
Linux distribution.
Yeah. And what makes you stick? Is it the solidity of it, or is there anything specific that makes you stick to it?
Well, I have always switched back and forth between KDE and GNOME. And KDE got to the point where I spent more time customizing it because I could, and less time actual work. So I ended up sticking with GNOME now, and the Pop OS with all of the extra features that they have, and the time that they put into the distro itself. I love the theme. It is the first distro that I have not changed the theme on, which is usually the first thing I do. So it's just been a perfect fit for me.
So you're basically saying that Rocco may have a trouser accident if there's ever a Pop! OS KDE edition.
To be honest with you, I think that would be bad. Only okay. because I would change everything and mess everything up.
Well, there's definitely something for enhancing your productivity by reducing your options. Since the last time I changed distributions, I haven't even changed the backdrop because the wallpaper because I would have to first figure out how to do it on this. And it's been, you know, I understand that I've used Pop! OS before and it's really nice. And do you have any System 76 hardware at all?
I don't. I wish I did, and I love the new Lemur that came out that they just announced. That is fantastic. But
that
no,
does
I
look
don't.
Very good, yeah.
I don't have any System 76 yeah. hardware.
So you like KDE because you can customize it, but you like GNOME because it basically lets you work. Do you have any other favorite tools? Like a favorite text editor, and that is a correct answer to that. Do you have a favorite browser? Something like this?
Hint, it's not Emacs.
Right. Well, okay, so I'm not even going to get into the text editor war because that's just not even right.
Oh, dear.
I don't care, but Mike does, so that's reasonable.
No, I'm joking, obviously. Obviously, I'm joking. Everybody is free to make incorrect choices, but yeah.
Right. Well, I probably use the incorrect choice of gedit. Saying.
I also use gedit all the freaking time. It's so good.
But, I mean, most of the stuff that I would say that is important to me is stuff that has to do with editing and finishing the podcast and the videos for YouTube. So OBS Studio is one that I have to have, and that's something that is super important to me. And then DaVinci Resolve. Even though it's not an open source editor, a video editor, it is the best tool for the job for me. It is absolutely amazing.
So I can see, because I also wanted to ask, about your, if you have any core beliefs in Linux or in open source, because there's plenty of people have got different beliefs, opinions, philosophies, call it what you will. So I can see that you are probably on the more pragmatic end of things with you.
I'd just like to interject for a moment.
No, I'm not. Oh, come on. Not really. Just because my beard is taking off on its own almost right now.
He definitely is rocking the COVID beard.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean that I'm becoming a GNU slash Mike. So, yeah, sorry. Back to the questions. Do you have what kind of beliefs or philosophies do you have, if any, when it comes to open source, free software, licensing, or whatever everybody uses, education, that kind of stuff?
Well, I believe that you should use the best tool for the job, regardless of what that is. So I would love for there to be an open source software alternative to every aspect of whatever you're doing. Sometimes that's possible, and sometimes the best tool for the job happens to be a proprietary piece of software. So I am a pragmatist, and you know, for example, I dual boot with Windows because I play Call of Duty Modern Warfare, and that doesn't run on Linux, but I use it as a tool. I don't use it as an operating system. So I will boot into Windows, and I will play a game, and I will boot out of Windows, and then go about my business. So it's more or less a hardware virtual machine, basically, for Windows to play a game or something like that. But yeah, I'm definitely on the pragmatic side because, for example, if you go down the list of video editors, Kdenlive, Shotcut, Shotwell, Olive, they're all great choices. And they may work for a specific set of circumstances of what you're doing. But I have found that DaVinci Resolve is, and for lack of a better term, leagues above that software. It just opens up so many doors and gives you so many options along with accelerated hardware for the rendering. And I could go on a tangent on DaVinci Resolve itself. So for me, that ends up being the best tool for the job. And I believe that everybody else should use the best tool for the job.
Do you, except for video editing and the odd game, do you have any other issues or spaces where Linux is basically lacking, or where not Linux, but maybe open source is lacking?
I don't know if open source is lacking in any area. I think we have alternatives for pretty much everything that you want to do. It depends on your specific situation and what you're looking for. So would I like there to be an open source alternative that is up to par with DaVinci Resolve? Yes. But I can look across the board, whether that's office suites or audio editing, and you can look across the board and pick out great software in the open source world.
100%, I would have to echo those points. And a great tool, I don't know if I mentioned it on the Spotlight when I was talking to you previously there, Rocco, but alternative2to.net is a great tool. If you have a go-to piece of software that's sticking out in your mind, let's say your Adobe Photoshops, your DaVinci Resolves, your whatever, and you have, I say, what I want to do, X, there's a standout piece of software, but that piece of software is very expensive and I can't afford it right now, it has a proprietary license and I want an open source alternative. It's a very good website for researching that kind of things. So if you go in there, they would recommend alternatives, and also you can drill it down by license and platform. So you could say, I want an alternatives that, but it's available on Linux, but a subset of that, I also want open source alternatives. It's a very good website for doing that kind of research.
But see, I think it's fantastic that we have that choice, that there are so many good open source software choices out there. And, you know, that website just highlights some of those.
That's a very good point. I've found myself that I'm a pragmatist in the same sense that you are. Sometimes I will use something that is proprietary because it's the best tool for the job, or is just the best in the sense of it's the easiest, it causes me the less friction. Like I'm okay with installing Spotify on Linux, I'm okay with installing Plex Media Server on Linux if that is what is involved, even though I've actually been dabbling as of last night in Jellyfin. So I do check out the 100% open source alternatives, but I don't necessarily think, absolutely everything has to be open source. I mean, I've personal anecdote, but I've encountered people who, even if it means that they will go for something that's free and open source, even if it means that it's inconveniencing themselves. And I don't know if I can make that step. I mean, power to them, well for them, as everything like that. But I don't know if I can make that additional step. I mean, as I said, I will use Spotify. I use Spotify on my phone. I pay for Spotify. And if I want Spotify on my desktop, then I will download and run Spotify on my desktop.
Well, I would put it to you that you do anyway, because we've just spent half an hour debugging our mine and yours audio issues. So, and we do that fairly often. So if we all were very, very, very friction, if we were all extremely intolerant to problems, we would all probably run whatever works out of the box. If there is a hardware audio, maybe a Hangout box or something like that. So yeah, I hear this fairly often, that people say, well, I just don't compromise on this, or I just rather use something. But people still make allowances for the things that they love, like, because we all love Linux, so we all have to make an allowance here and there, I think, anyway. And it's sometimes hard to see, because we are quite used to making these allowances. And of course, if we were on Windows, it would be a different allowance we would have to make. If we were on the Mac, again, it would be a different allowance. But I think we all are making decisions and are making sacrifices in order to use Linux and open source.
Well, to your point, it comes down to time. It comes down to how much time you have and how much time you're willing to put out there in finding these alternatives. Sometimes there's just not enough time to troubleshoot what you need to troubleshoot in order to get something working. It's other times you spend an enormous amount of time troubleshooting and finding different pieces of software, like, for example, Zoom. I use Zoom for the live streams, and it's a proprietary piece of software. I have spent hours, countless hours, trying all of the open source alternatives and continue to update and say I've tried it again and see how that works again. And none of them give me the options that I need in order to control a live stream in the way that I can with Zoom. So it gives us the least amount of headaches with the most amount of time actually producing content.
Having said that, Zoom has actually failed on us, so we're actually using Jitsi Meet at the moment.
Yeah, it's weird. I've had problems with Zoom this time, even though I'm pretty sure I used it on the different on work partition last week to talk to somebody. It's like, I think video conferencing on Linux and definitely audio is just problematic. I don't know if it's ever going to be fixed, and I don't know what the reason is behind it, but it always seems to be giving me problems. Rocco, do you have a favorite, just to smoothly move completely somewhere else, do you have a favorite piece of Linux hardware or something that you run Linux on?
I don't have a favorite piece of hardware. I actually, last week or the week before, we talked about trying to get into Raspberry Pis, because that's something that I have never put the time and effort into. And part of that is because I've never found a use case that I would be, that I need. But actually, the open sign that I have behind me was a perfect idea to have that be controlled by a Raspberry Pi for the live stream. I just haven't got there yet. So no, I don't have any specific, I don't have a Linux phone or any of the prototypes of the Pine phone or anything like that. I do want to get a Pine phone. I do want a Pinebook Pro. That's something that I do want to get. I just don't have any right now.
One thing I was just thinking when you're saying the open sign, I mean, an alternative would be that you could go with the whole radio studio and have a red record sign up in the corner.
Yep. Well, this sign I found, or actually I didn't find it. My dad found it and thought it would be awesome for the show. So it's on the wall and it goes on every time we go live on YouTube. But it would be cool to have it go, you know, automatically.
I have attended once the European hangout that you do, or BitDaddy Linux Live. I'm getting the plugs in there. So
Biddle.
I have,
we just call it Biddle Europe.
I did attend the European one, and almost every single time since then, dude, I've been missing you. I'm like, oh, sorry. Like every single time since then that I've kind of, something else has come up or whatever and I missed it, then instantly Rocco messaged me going, dude. I'm like, I will attend.
All right, again. So I'm giving you plenty of advanced warning. April okay. 11th is the next Biddle Europe at 3 p.m. Eastern.
So around the same time that we began recording this, essentially.
April 11th. So be there this time.
Or be square.
Yeah.
April 11th, that's a Saturday, right?
That is a Saturday. And,
so the second Saturday of the month, isn't it?
Yep.
Yes.
So we do a Biddle live stream every week, but we do once a month, I do a double live stream, which that becomes the Biddle Europe at 3 p.m. And we still have the regular Biddle at 8 p.m. Eastern then, but yeah.
So you have, okay, so you are, when you say Eastern, that means that you are on the eastern side of the United States. That's 5 hours more or less behind UTC, isn't it?
Correct. It'd be 5 p.m. EDT, or 3 p.m. EDT, sorry.
There was a spanner in the works this week because, you guys change your daylight savings about 2 weeks before we do. So it landed last night. So myself and Mike were literally messaging back and forth saying, oh, is he still on for that time? We're like, yeah. Wait, the time changed. So then I panicked and I kind of messaged you going, dude, do you realize the time changed? Are you still okay?
Yeah. No, it actually changed last night in the middle of Biddle for the Europe guys. So the guys that connected from Europe, they started it. And in the middle of that, it changed over. So it ended up being 3 a.m. for them by the end of it.
It's I don't like that the governments still do this. I don't know. Anyway, that's a completely different discussion. When you say Biddle, you mean Big Daddy Linux
live. Yep.
Which, as you said, that's a stream of how many people do you normally have there?
So normally on YouTube viewing it live, we'll have over 100 people viewing it and in the YouTube chat. But in the Zoom room itself talking, we have anywhere from 25 to 32 people.
How do you manage that? I'm having problems. There's sometimes problems talking to one person.
Sometimes it's very difficult sometimes. I mean, some weeks are better than others. But what will happen is the first hour we will do a distro. Well, for 2 weeks we do a distro challenge. So for the first hour of each show, we will talk about each person's experience, and I'll just go down the list of people. And there's other people that actually help me do this. So Zebedee Boss, my friend PZ, Eric Adams, Dan Simmons, Nate. These guys will help introduce the person. And watch the waiting room. And so there's no way I could do it by myself. I mean, I started it by myself, but these guys helped me out and helped tremendously. So we'll go down the list for the distro hour. And then the second hour, it just opens up to whatever we want to talk about, whatever subject somebody wants to bring up. And it's basically a big virtual lug is what it is.
This is the amazing thing about this, I think, right now is that with coronavirus and people being locked in their places, there are going to be plenty of Linux user groups or Linux communities that will try to transfer their meetups online. And I think one way definitely to do that is the way you guys are doing it. So are you getting any inquiries from Linux user groups or anybody who would like to basically do a virtual lug?
No, I've not got any inquiries, but we have been getting an uptick of people in joining. So, you know, everybody's affected by this thing. And what it does is it gives people an outlet just to be normal and talk to people when you're closed in. And last night we had we did the Linux Mint Debian edition, and we had the Mintcast guys there. So Leo and Tony and Joe joined us and interacted with all the people as far as their experiences. And if they were having trouble, they jumped in on, hey, how you can fix it this way. So it is just a big virtual lug that is filled with such a great community. There are so many different levels of experience, different levels of history, and you know, Alan Pope was there last night. All kinds of different people show up. Martin Wimper shows up, on the European versions. So it's an amazing thing to watch and see it grow, and I just love doing it.
It's very interesting that you mentioned the Linux Mint Debian edition, of course, because it was about a week ago when it was released, roughly weeks, speaking. Yeah. And I remember, Mike, I don't know if you're there during the chat at the time, but I remember I just was checking it out on a virtual machine just to check it out. And then I was posting kind of screenshots into the into our own Telegram group. And at one stage, the thought just occurred to me and said, okay, so I know what it's like by default. It seems to be pretty standard. I'm going to see if I can break this or see what happens if I do something crazy. So virtual machine, it's like if it completely and utterly borks the system, then I can always just delete it and whatever, no harm, no foul. So I decided to point Linux Mint Debian Edition at Debian testing just to see what would work. It updated successfully, but of course all the internal update tools completely crapped themselves. Like they kept saying, like there seemed to be a problem with your repos. Your repos are corrupt and everything like this. So I was thinking, oh yeah, well that's probably understandable considering that the tools that have been written for it are expecting to be seeing these certain repos and everything. Whereas I've completely taken the carpet from underneath them. So it worked, but you just have to do all the updates for the command line.
I would like to see if the updates would continue working about half a year into it, or if it just eventually breaks because some dependencies just aren't there.
I think it was actually pointing at Debian testing itself, not the Debian testing code name. Because if you pointed at the current Debian testing code name, it eventually that will transition into Debian stable. So you'll go from Debian testing to Debian stable because the stable has taken over that code name branch. Whereas if you don't use the code name and if you literally just put it in as Debian testing, it's almost like a rolling Debian testing distro. But they don't recommend it because it goes through transition phases. In other words, it will gradually get more stable as it gets closer to the stable branch taking it over. But then immediately after that, it goes into almost like SID freaking nightly testing territory. So they say that it goes from one extreme to the other. If you're into that sort of thing, it's interesting. Tangentially related, there's actually distributions that are actually based off Debian testing. So I think they kind of shield...
Well, like Ubuntu, for example.
Well, no, I mean like full on is just Debian testing, but like a little bit customized. Is it Sparky Linux? So they have a stable and a roll. They have a stable branch and they have a rolling branch. And their rolling branch, I believe, is based off Debian testing. So,
well, MX Linux, you can switch to testing if you'd like to.
Yeah, I've heard so many good things about Debian or about MX Linux, but I've not really had the chance to check it out, bar very briefly in a virtual machine. But it does seem to be very good. With a nice KDE, very heavily customized KDE, but customized in a good way. They do, it's a very nice theme, and I think they have some transparency and things like that. So it's very nicely set up version of both Debian and XFCE.
KDE.
No, XFCE.
Talking about smooth transitions, how do we go back to the point? So we were talking about BDDL, or as you call it, BIDL.
Yes.
There's basically a virtual Linux user group with 20 people, you said, on the Zoom chat. How long does it last? Is your lag in session?
It's okay. So it is 2 hours long. So the first hour is the distro challenge. Second hour is the anywhere we want. But then when we end the live stream, we stay on there for another hour just talking about everything and anything. And I think sometimes the after show is more exciting than the show that's on YouTube because everybody's more calm. Everybody's more relaxed. You know, they feel like they can say whatever they want. So it's like, that's actually sometimes more fun.
You should secretly record that.
I do. I record everything.
You're telling me this now?
I record everything.
Yes. What do you need to do what do you need to have set up to join in? So obviously have a browser for Zoom or the Zoom app. And do you check people's quality of microphone or anything like that?
So when we start the meeting, right before we start the meeting, we will go through and do mic checks for anybody that's already there. We prefer you to have the Zoom client because that actually gives you more control over Zoom settings, like your mic and everything. You can connect through the browser. That's, you know, acceptable, but we would prefer to have you to have the downloaded Zoom. And they have a Debian version. It's in the Arch repositories. There's a version for pretty much every Linux out there. We don't do mic checks after the show starts. So if you join afterwards, we just hopefully, you know, okay. So it's something that we do that we try to make professional, but at the end of the day, it's just a virtual lug that we're all getting together to talk to. So there are times where people talk over each other because of connection issues, or there are times where, hey, somebody's mic just went crazy and we have to, you know, fumble for the mute button for that person and mute them right away. So that does happen. But basically, you download Zoom and you go to bigdaddylinux.com/Zoom, which then takes you, opens up the Zoom application, and it connects you to the meeting. If you do that at somewhere a couple minutes before 8 o'clock, you'll join into the Zoom room. There's a waiting room that we, that's how we control the meeting itself. And then once we let you in through the waiting room, you're in and, you know, you can just chat.
Very quickly, and one of the most common issues that people tend to have when it comes to joining any kind of video chat is they have their speakers and their microphone, and whether it's the desktop speakers or laptop speakers or something, even worse when it's laptop speakers, because what is happening is your microphone is picking up the output from and it's just creating a feedback loop. So if you're ever experiencing that issue, always connect with or always listen via headphones, so that way what you're listening to does not feed back into your microphone. Just a quick tip.
Yeah. Well, again, it goes back to, you know, it's just a virtual lug. So there'll be times where people are smashing on their keyboard that we have to say, hey, you know, nobody can hear because you're smashing on your keyboard. But I mean, it happens. Exactly. <my point. laughs> But it's all a good time and a fun time for everybody that joins. And we end it with a last word for everybody. So even if you go that 2 hours and you don't have a chance to speak, or you don't want to speak, I go through the list of everybody that's there at the end to give them a last word. And that's more just to be able to say, no matter how much time you have put into this show, you get a say regardless. So
it's a genuinely, I mean, I think I tweeted this out and said it's such a wholesome bunch of people that you feel like, no matter what you say, there's never going to be any judgment. Everyone kind of errs and ifs and buts and everything like that. And it's just, that's the nature of it. I mean, if I listen back to the very early versions of this show and I'm erring and ifing and butting all the freaking time. And even now, I mean, I very rarely listen back to these recordings because I'm thinking, I just can hear every single error and if and but and everything. But I suppose that's just the nature of what things are. And if I focused on that, then I'll be too nervous to do the show in the first place. So there's no point in getting hung up on it.
Yep. Well, everybody is welcome to join. We do keep it pretty much family friendly for the conversation, but everybody is welcome to join and join in the conversation. The more the merrier. So the only problem with it is the Zoom client on Linux only allows for 25 people in the gallery view. So on the Linux version of Zoom, you can have up to 100 people. Now, obviously, that would get so small of a screen, that wouldn't be feasible, but it would be so nice. And I have contacted Zoom before about it and still do today about adding that feature to more people for more participants. So I have to switch back and forth between screens when somebody's talking that's on the end of the list. But yeah, everybody gets a say in it, and it's fantastic. So
that's a limit only on how many people you actually see on your screen, not a limit on how many participants you can hear or how many people can be in the virtual room, isn't it?
Correct. So I can have up 100 people in the room, but I'm capturing that Zoom screen from OBS, so I can only see 25, and then if I need to see the rest, I have to hit the button next to it to pan to that screen. So,
so you're saying that Rocco is going to purchase an 8K monitor?
Well, it's actually a Zoom limitation, so there's really nothing I can do until they allow more participants on that first page.
So the next thing you do is Linux Spotlight. So that's a how often, what kind of a show, if you can introduce it in a few words, please.
Well, again, that started through Biddle, where people were giving their their Linux journey. We started going down the list of, hey, what? How did you start in Linux? Where did you first hear about it?
So it's Rocco.
And I thought that would be cool to have a place where everybody's story was in one place. You could go, you could count on going to this place to get their Linux story. And it's that started Linux Spotlight. So it is a interview with everybody from regular community members that maybe nobody's ever heard of, to developers, to distro maintainers. And this coming Wednesday, I'm releasing an episode with Mark Shuttleworth.
Oh, so, nice.
Yep. And it's basically a conversation between me and them of who they are, where they started, how they started in Linux, and what they're doing today. And it can range from 40 minutes to 2 hours sometimes. But it's a video that I put out on YouTube, and it's also in a podcast form or any podcast app that you have.
2 hours? I mean, who would talk for 2 hours?
I don't know who would talk for 2 hours, Connor.
What kind of person would do that?
Some guy from Ireland, I don't know.
What do you enjoy most about doing the Linux Spotlight?
I enjoy the actual conversation that I have with that person to get to know who they are. When you, like, okay, for example, you have people in the community that I have talked to every week for the last 2 years, 3 years sometimes. And I still find out new stuff when I talk to them in Linux Spotlight, because you don't get to talk to them for the full, you know, full 2 hours. You're just talking to them with little bits, little, you know, here and there. But Linux Spotlight, it's solely on them, that it's, they are in the spotlight and their story is in the spotlight. And some of these people have such a rich history that you would never know unless you actually sat down and talked with them for an hour or two. And I can point to Jill Bryant, who has such a great history in Linux with her whole family. And Barbara Harris, she was another one. Her journey as far as teaching and using Linux in that way, it was fantastic. And this is something that you would never know until you actually sat down and talked with them. I think that's my favorite part.
I see another question on this list, so I was like thinking that Mike has been reading out every single question, so I might as well take the mantle and just pick a quick question.
Run with it.
So, what setup do you use for broadcasting? Do you want to plug your hardware, your microphone, or your audio interface, or anything like that?
Well, for the setup for hardware, I have an Alesis mixer, which is something that one of the guys recommended because it, you know, ran out of the box with Linux for him, and it's been great for me. I have the Shure SM7B mic, which is, in my opinion, the best mic on the market. It is way more expensive than any mic on the market as well, but it just... You know, I thought about it, and I originally started out with a regular mic, and then I went to a Yeti, and then I, you know, I'm thinking about upgrading, and at, you know, you're spending this money, and it sounds like it's cheaper to buy a lower priced mic, but at the end of the day, when you're spending all this money, by the time you're done, you're going to spend that money anyway. And I just wanted something that was going to give me the best opportunity to give me the best audio possible, other than, you know, maybe you know, a lousy voice or something like that, but at least mask that somehow. So the SM7B is what I use for a mic, and my, I don't know, other than that, I do want to say that I just introduced a cough switch, which is the most fantastic thing ever made known to man for audio recording. So it's a foot activated cough switch that if I need to cough, all I do is step on it and it cuts my mic out completely. Where originally I was using keyboard shortcuts to mute the system volume, and there were times where it muted, and there were other times where I'm muted. It shows the icon that I'm muted and I'm not muted. There I am coughing like a maniac, and these people were trying to have a conversation, and it was, so I needed something hardware that I knew was going to work, and it is fantastic.
So I just did a quick Amazon search for that microphone that you referenced, and yeah, like it's getting up there in price, but I suppose that is what you get what you pay for, and it certainly does sound quite nice from coming through the internet airwaves as such, and also on in the final recording any time that I've listened.
I mean, Connor, I sound like Mickey Mouse without this mic. I'm just saying.
It remains to be seen. I'll have to meet you in person. I think we've gone over our hardware in the past, but just for comparison's sake, I have an Audio Technica AT2020, the SLR or XLR version, and it's going into a Behringer audio interface that seems to work fine, and so much so that the Shane kept telling me that he was very jealous of my microphone, and Shane has recently picked up the same microphone, which he said he went into a physical shop and paid over and above the price because he said, oh, give me now.
Oh my.
No, he wanted to support local
business as well,
rather than give it the money to Amazon, I think, because it's what he wanted to do.
Just be clear, I did not pick mine up from Amazon. I picked mine up used on the classifieds. So I also did not give money to Amazon.
I am the people hater who bought a very cheap mic on Amazon, and everybody can hear it in it. It's not just my voice. It's also the fact that my microphone cost about 30 quid. So, and I'm thinking about getting a better piece of hardware, but then I would also have to learn better. I would also have to learn to speak better, and I'm not sure if I have got the time and will and even mental capability. So I might just leave it. And now I even clicked my teeth into the microphone. I mean, that's professionalism redefined, people. I'm just leaving a pause here in case Shane wants to cut this out. Done. So you obviously, Rocco, have a huge interaction with the Linux community. How do you find us?
Well, the Linux community years ago was not that friendly on a whole. There obviously, you know, you meet different parts that it depends on timing of when you started and where you started looking. So years ago, it wasn't exactly the best experience. But we have gotten so much better over the years that, you know, I would say there are still bad apples in certain places, but we have got to the point where I think you can go pretty much everywhere in the Linux community and have a good experience. There are so many good groups themselves, from the Jupyter Broadcasting groups to the Destination Linux Network groups to the Biddle community.
Two
Linux lads. great plug. What I'm saying is we have grown so much as a community that, and I think it's awesome. And I think we need to continue that and treat people like you want to be treated. And that's all.
That's very wise. What do you value the most in the community?
I value the individual conversations that I have with people. And it, like I said, you get to know these people, not just on Linux Spotlight, but, you know, talking to them through Telegram, just interact, like specifically now we're in a time where everybody's inside, everybody's cooped up, everybody's a little antsy. And to be able to reach out to somebody and say, hey, how you doing? I'll give you an example. Cheese Bacon from Jupyter Broadcasting sends me a message one day and says, dude, you are so cool. And, you know, he was joking and it was funny and everything, but it was just one of those times where it was nice to hear. And I try to do that myself throughout the week with different people, to just reach out and say hello to them. Just be normal to them. You know, we're not, none of us are celebrities. We're just regular people who like Linux. So if we all treat each other like, you know, if I treat you like you're my best friend, that's what will grow the community and grow us as people as well.
So speaking of communities, do you prefer any online spaces over others? For example, YouTube, Reddit, Twitter, Mastodon, insert your social media area here. Do you find there's more that you tend to gravitate towards? Or,
well, you know, obviously being involved in YouTube, I gravitate towards the YouTube community and specifically the Telegram groups. That is something that I am super active in most of the communities. Telegram is where I pretty much spend a lot of time. I do spend more time than I need to on Twitter, and I don't know why. But I find, like, for example, what do you call it? Yeah, gaping me now. The open source alternative to MeWe. MeWe.
Oh, sorry.
MeWe is a place where there are a lot of Linux people, a lot of Linux users, and it's something that you only have so much time in the day. Mastodon is another one where I would love to be active on Mastodon, but there's just only so much time in the day. And at the end of the day, you go where you can be the most active. So I would say that Telegram is where you would find me the most active.
In that, I'm just going to give my own interactions that I've had. I mean, Mastodon to me is so similar to Twitter, and I feel that I've already got my Twitter headspace down, as in I go to Twitter because I wouldn't want to do X, or sometimes I'm just casually browsing Twitter and I might just reply to people. So that function has already been fulfilled in my head, has been compartmentalized in my head. Mastodon is way too similar to from that point of view, just from the use case, that I feel that if I was on Mastodon, that I feel that I would just be using a bot to copy and paste what I'm doing on Twitter, because I'm just more active on Twitter. Unfortunately, I mean, if Mastodon probably started, or I came into Twitter late, so Mastodon was very much a thing back then. But if I had interacted with Mastodon before I interacted with Twitter, I might be doing the exact same thing on Mastodon that I'm doing on Twitter. So you never know. MeWe is actually one that I've not heard of, so I might have to check out. But again, you're saying that it's something that you only have so much time in the day, and you can only interact with so many places. So it's mainly Twitter and Telegram for me that I interact with people.
Well, for example, you know, Biddle has a presence everywhere, whether it's BigDaddyLinux.com or Telegram or Discord, discourse forums that we have, MeWe, Mastodon, it's everywhere. But, you know, at the end, like I said, at the end of the day, there's only so much time to put into that. So although it's there and there are other people interacting, like with the discourse forums, I personally can't always be there. So
every now and then I get some movement and I'm thinking, okay, I'm going to start, I'll be on Twitter and I'm going to get engaged with in people's conversations. And I just can't find the time. I mean, how do you even manage to... Because whenever I open Twitter on my phone, I just see how many messages I'd have to scroll through to get to the top, and I give up because it's just too much stuff happening.
Well, you know, for example, with Twitter, you're right. There's no way I'm scrolling through that whole timeline. Half of it's filled with stuff I don't even want to talk about because it's, you know, politics or whatever. But what I end up doing is I end up following, there's a lot of people that I follow, but there's certain people that I will have notifications for every tweet that they put out. And I will try to interact with those notifications. Other than that, you know, there's no way to answer everybody or to talk to make every post.
Okay.
One thing I'll just say before you might speak there, Mike, is how I deal with Twitter is I use TweetDeck, and TweetDeck, I have three accounts. So I have my personal and then the notifications for that. Then I'm also on the our Linux community, the Dublin Linux community of that Twitter, and I've also the Linux Lads Twitter and the notifications for that. So that is a lot of columns, and because it's personal information, I'll put it into our chat that we have amongst ourselves. So if you're curious, but I'm not going to be putting this out publicly, but that just gives you an idea of of what I do to manage it. So give me 2 seconds, and this is probably awkward for the recording, but we'll see.
We are professionals here, dude. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I mean, pictures over radio, people.
Now, I definitely use TweetDeck as well, and I do have columns for certain people that I follow. So that is also I totally can relate to using TweetDeck and using that to manage everything.
So I just put that up on our Telegram chat.
Nice. Yes. So making another smooth transition, as I've taken recently to do, is there anything, Rocco, that you are waiting for to happen in Linux? Something that you are exciting about, that's about to happen, something that you think this is going to be amazing?
Well, I am excited for 2004 to release, because I think that's going to be a really awesome release. Everything that I have talked to with people and have tested myself, I really do think it's going to be a solid release. So I am excited for that. But as far as like something that will, you know, change the landscape or anything, I'm not looking forward to anything in particular. I'm looking forward to just communicating with people and, you know, continuing the relationship you have with them and just enjoying using Linux. A lot of times we overlook just being able to sit down and use Linux and the freedom that that gives us. We're too busy or we'll be doing work or whatever. And I think if we stop for a moment and just think of how far we've come in Linux from just even a few years ago, where you can install a Linux version in 10 minutes and everything just works, including now your NVIDIA drivers that you used to have headaches for. We're in such a great time. I think we just need to sit down and realize that and enjoy it.
And I would like to echo the sentiment in relation to 2004. I've been trying it out in virtual machines and is looking to be an incredibly solid, refined, just polished release. I mean, it's almost like a new benchmark for how polished it seems to be. I mean, obviously I've not run it on any of my hardware at the moment, so I can't comment on whether it has some kind of strange bug in relation to some specific hardware that I have, but just from interacting with it in a virtual machine, it seems to be an incredibly refined and polished release, which it stands to reason for it being an LTS, but it's something that shouldn't be taken for granted. I mean, there's been LTS versions in the past where there have been something that is quite major and it has to be kind of quickly patched, even within less than a week, like 2 or 3 days of it being released, of people just finding a bug or something like that. But touch wood, but this seems to be an incredibly refined release, so fair play to the guys in Canonical for what seems to be a very solid release with 2004.
I can definitely see that Linux is becoming very stable, very usable, and I've seen, as you said, Rocco, before, that the community is also getting into a heavy place. And I got reminded personally about how things used to be a few days back when, as we are all at home, we are all video conferencing, and I couldn't get into a video conference because of whatever other reasons. It wasn't actually my operating system that was preventing me, but it was, and there was a joke that somebody jokingly said, well, just get a Mac, man. And it was a joke, and I took it somewhat, it made me very cranky. Like, I took it seriously. I shouldn't have, obviously. That kind of thing flies around everywhere, you know. It was an innocent joke, and I took it way more serious than I should have. And I think I still have it in me, because I remember the time where things only really used to work in IE6, or you just needed to make to have Silverlight working to get into stuff. Or I remember spending a week trying to figure out why my Wi-Fi isn't working on Ubuntu 8.04, realizing that In my inexperience, I'm putting some kind of a password into instead of a hex code, and the software is not smart enough to tell me. So I think this is not even going anywhere as a question, I'd imagine, because I just lost the thread of my thinking here. But it is interesting how far we've gone in, and it is exciting to realize how far we are from where we've been even 10 years ago, which is not that much time compared to the progress that was made on the other platforms, which have started, which let's say in the 2000, Windows was way ahead of where Linux was at the time, and how much progress happened in the Windows world and how much progress happened in the Linux world. Obviously, we've had a lot of catching up to do, but I think we are pretty much there, and now it's just a numbers game.
One thing that I will say is that just when you're speaking, what struck me was when you're saying, oh, everyone was targeting IE6. Unfortunately, there seems to be that everyone is targeting Chromium. So go out and download and run Firefox, people, because it's the only... I'm not just saying that because I'm saying, take one for the team and it's an inferior product. It's a genuinely good browser. It's like you will not feel the hardship of trying out Firefox at all. I use Firefox as my daily driver, and I very rarely miss things. But I'm noticing just recently little things here or there are starting to just target Chromium, and it's kind of annoying. So get that... get the usage numbers up on Firefox, and they would have less of an excuse for exclusively targeting Chromium.
Well, I do think that Firefox is a great choice, but I also think Brave Browser is an excellent choice as well. It's based on Chromium, obviously, but I think the ideas that they have, the things that they're implementing, are really good. So, you know, yes, Firefox is a great choice, but there are others.
Isn't Mozilla going to... I have some kind of a vague recall that Mozilla is going to be attempting to do something similar to what Brave does with the monetization. I'm not sure. Maybe I'm completely wrong. And I think they should try. I mean, their market margin is now so slim that it's down to us people who really want to use Firefox, that I think they have got now... They are in a great position to start testing new stuff, because it's that, you know, being on the razor edge of being on the cutting edge of development would be very difficult for Google right now with Chrome, because if they try something new and it doesn't work out, a lot of people get affected by that. And Mozilla, since they are a bit low on numbers right now, I think if they start, I think now is the time for them, since Firefox has really improved and it's very stable and fast right now, it's time for them to start looking what they could do with the users they have, what kind of new things they could introduce, whilst not obviously compromising the stability and the speed of the current Firefox. But I think they could look at Brave and think, okay, we can copy this.
I've not heard anything particular in relation to the exact revenue model that Brave are doing, but I know that Firefox are exploring different revenue models, including offering security services that people would pay for anyway, but you get them from Mozilla, and you would be helping Mozilla... Mozilla's revenue stream at the same time. Like, I think they're introducing a VPN and so on. But my understanding of Brave, and I'm running Brave at the moment just for this video conference call, is that Brave's model is that they have an alternative for displaying ads for you. So they will block the ads by default, so they're not intrusive, but as an alternative, what they will do is they will take the revenue that possibly could have been generated for that and funnel it in a different way, and might even be I think they even might even give a kickback to the user who's using the browser as well. I've not used Brave extensively, so people feel free to correct me if I'm incorrect in that sense. So I don't know if Mozilla are copying that exact model, but I do know that they're copying, or they're not copying, they're exploring alternative revenue streams.
Yeah, they do have, I think they have a balanced track for their revenue, Brave does. And, you know, it's not popular with everyone. Obviously, anytime you introduce a system of revenue, there are going to people that there are going to be people that don't like it. But I think it's a even-handed way of doing it. And I hope that Mozilla continues to offer these services, because at some point you would rather them not get their revenue from places like Google and stuff like that. So yeah, I hope they continue.
So Rocco, if Linux were to disappear, what would you do?
Wow, dude, that is a question in itself. Holy macro, if Linux were to disappear, what would I do? I can't say of what I would do. I still have a couple USBs laying around with Linux versions on them, so I might run those for as long as I possibly can. Yeah. Other than that, I would probably end up trying to find something. I mean, when you ask that question, are you talking like all Linux? Like you're talking everything, including like BSD and everything, or what? How much are you boxing me in here?
I'm sure the BSD guys would be very happy being told that they are Linux. let's say that you don't have a hobby suddenly, because all computing is now Windows, Mac, Android, iOS, and that's it. For some reason, Linux has been erased, and BSD and whatever other niche operating system gone.
Well, I would have to honestly say that I would probably go with Mac. And the reason being is they have the convergence scene down pat. When you can take a photo on your phone and have it on your iMac instantly, and you can continue working on your whatever it may be, your iPad, that convergence scene is down pat with Apple. So that's probably where I would end up. Although I would still probably run my USBs as long as I could.
And do you think you'd be able to move your do you think you'd be able to change from Big Daddy Linux to Big Daddy Mac, or do you think you'd have to find a different hobby?
I would definitely have to find a different hobby. It surely wouldn't. There would. Okay, so here's the serious part of that. I would probably go to Mac, but there would be no passion for anything. Like there would be no excitement about anything. It would be just another tool that you would use. So I use Linux not because of anything other than the community itself is so passionate about everything, and I enjoy that so much. That's part of the reason why I run Linux. So yeah, I might use a different operating system if Linux went away tomorrow, but there would be nothing there. So I would find other ways to spend my time.
My thoughts on those two ecosystems are that Mac, I'm just not used to the paradigm. I mean, I know some people are. I'm used to more the Windows paradigm. So anytime that I'm using Mac, it's frustrating in that sense, and also a feeling that it's a cliche, but it's a cliche for a reason. The Mac world is a walled garden. In other words, it's all tailored for, if you're inside the ecosystem, it's all good, but don't venture outside. There's these walls. Don't venture outside the walls. And insert your eye branding here. They'll have your eye cable plugs into your eye TV, plugs into whatever. So it's all about the contained ecosystem. So In that sense, Windows is more open, as in you can still download stuff. And I know they're trying to be, with their Windows Store, they're trying to be more Mac-like, but it's still open in a sense. The defaults frustrate the absolute hell out of me, so I would have to customize Windows so much. But I would probably settle on Windows if I because that's I've been using Windows since Windows 3.1, so that is what I'm familiar with. Windows 10 frustrates the hell out of me, but if that is where I would have to choose between Mac OS and Windows, I'd probably settle on a very heavily customized version of Windows 10?
I would probably have to go with a Mac because I've had a Mac and before, and it worked. And whenever I try to do anything on Windows, it just breaks. And I'm arguably trying things that, like, install a specific version of Python and make sure that it run that you can run Python scripts on Windows. It's not easy to do. For some reason, you know, changing the environment variables, it's not something, or maybe it's just because I'm not used to clicking through 20 million different menus just to get to something that I can do in the terminal on Linux or on a Mac easily. Maybe if Windows subsystem for Linux changed so that instead of being something that is in the little corner of the window of Windows, there is that thing that you can use to emulate a real Linux. If it changed and basically the whole operating system could be the whole Windows experience could be discarded, and you could basically use the WSL thing to manipulate the operating system without ever touching the Windows control panel, which is atrociously poor, at least in my opinion. And without ever having to deal with Candy Crush being installed on your computer against your will,
and you know, Cortana.
If you basically could take Windows, okay, leave whatever it is it does underneath, put Linux on the top of it, and then be able to run i3 or GNOME or anything, just so that you don't have to use the start menu in the bottom, the Windows 10 menu with that doesn't really search very well when you type things into it. If they basically turned it into Linux and discard everything Windows and then make it open source, but then, you know, that would be Linux and not Windows. That's why it would be better.
You can't get away with it that easily, because you just said, what if Linux disappeared? Oh, I would use WSL on Windows.
Okay, yeah. No. If Linux disappears, then you actually don't have a Mac either. Because we said, okay, BSD.
Introducing BSD of your own accord.
Yeah, no. We said, okay, there's no Linux and there's no BSD. But if there's no BSD, that means there's no Mac OS either. So you are basically stuck with, and there's no Android, so you are stuck with Windows, and that's it.
Or open source.
Wow, we are destroying the world here. You know that.
Yes. And also, open Solaris doesn't count either. That's basically BSD.
If there's no Linux, there's no Linux servers. The whole world comes to a stop. So
yes.
Okay. I think we've spent enough time on that topic.
I think we've spent enough time. Actually, we probably should wrap it up.
So on that vein, Rocco, anything you would like to plug?
Well, I would like to plug the awesome members of the Biddle community. If you go to bigdaddylinux.com, all of the links will be there to get to the community. But I ask everybody to go to the Telegram link, join the Telegram group, and meet all of the awesome people that are in there. Because without any of them, you know, I tell them all the time, without any of them joining the live streams, I'd be talking to myself, and that kind of would be boring. So, yeah, definitely check out the Biddle community.
And I would very much like to echo that sentiment. I mean, I've genuinely, I'm not just saying that because Rocco's here, I've hung out with the community element virtually, because I live over here and they live over there for the most part, even though your community is international. But it does seem to be a lot of them are over in the States. One day I'll make it over and I'll be able to join you guys in person for a coffee or something like that. But it's a genuinely wholesome and fun community to hang out in. So, speaking of events, unfortunately, Fostalk Live is not going ahead. So, I think previously in our previous episode, we said that it was going ahead, but Joe had subsequently announced between the time of our recording and the time of our publishing that it is not going ahead. So, obviously, we will see if there's any kind of alternative, and we had plan in our back of our mind of what we would do when we're there. So who knows, we might actually just record that anyway and put that out as an alternative So you won't be seeing us doing it live, but you might get it as a recorded podcast. So we'll see what that happens when it comes out. So obviously our thoughts are going out to everyone who's affected by this COVID-19 situation. And it's unfortunate that we can't meet in person and a lot of events are being cancelled, but it's for a very good reason. So stay safe out there, people. So our socials, if you want to get in contact with us, we are on Telegram, we are on Twitter, we're on Mastodon. You can email us at show@linuxlad.com, and you can also donate to us. And all of those details are on our website, which is linuxlads.com. It's not a shite website. It's actually a very good website. So
we did manage to keep it family friendly up until now.
Yeah, in the honor of Rocco, we didn't say fuck once. So
now you fixed that.
Yes.
Rocco, any of your where could people find you online?
BigDaddyLinux.com is the website. I have that name pretty much everywhere: Twitter, YouTube, all of the important places. So search Big Daddy Linux and you will find it.
Perfect.
Alrighty.
I think with this, it's time for us to wrap it up today. We've been talking for quite a while. And I say thank you very much, Rocco, for coming on our show. It's been amazing. Great chatting to you.
Indeed.
I had a great time. I love the episodes that you guys put out. Listen to them as soon as they air. So it was perfect.
Thank you. That's great endorsement from you. You're in the habit of making great shows yourselves. So that's great hearing this from you. And with this, I've been Mike.
I've been Connor.
And I've not been Shane. I'm Rocco.
All right.
Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.